I've never heard a person walk out of the stadium and say, wow, I wish that game would have included more waiting.
He is an endless source of baseball and hockey knowledge.
Jose Berrios, el lanzador de Puerto Rico en el Clásico Mundial de Béisbol.
John Morosi, every week with Wyman and Bob.
You're being serious with me right now?
I love it. He is with us every week, and by God, I bet he is just brimming with excitement and satisfaction after that World Baseball Classic. He is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Our buddy John Morosi is here. How are you, sir?
Outstanding, gentlemen. Thanks for the new year, new open. So our thanks to Mike Lefko and the full crew for putting that together. Well done there. And yes, my goodness, what a great time to be speaking with you guys. I know you're in Peoria. You've got Julio on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Great story there by Tom Verducci. And we're coming off of, objectively, the greatest baseball tournament in recorded human history. So I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Well, I saw you tweet out prior to the game saying, here's my wish list. A, I hope it's a great game. And then B, I hope this turns into a seven-game series. And it'd be hard to disagree after what we saw. You know, Dave and I were kind of, you know, speaking into existence what we'd love to see. Wouldn't it be crazy if we saw Ohtani come out of the bullpen and have to face his teammate and the game's on the line and, you know, like this Hollywood never going to happen type of moment. And then it happened, John.
And then it happened. And for me, first of all, I was just so privileged to be there and witness it. And I was working on the World Feed broadcast with Dave Fleming and Yonder Alonso. And so I was on the ground level. I was on the field level. Actually, I had the best, I'll say it selfishly, the best broadcast position in the world because I was right next to Team Japan's dugout. So I was there watching, and we had a little meeting before the broadcast. And I said, guys, I really think my most important job today is to tell you where Ohtani is, what he's doing, because we've never seen it happen before where the closer is also in the lineup as the DH and is the most closely watched hitter in the game as well. So we were just speaking, and we've got a great producer in Bill Bolin and director in Jason Lobb, and I just said, guys, I'll be your eyes and ears down there. I'll just tell you what I see. And so one of the stories was Ohtani walks down to the bullpen and starts to get ready. The other story was he leaves the bullpen, he comes back to hit, and then he's back, and then he's back again. So it was just amazing to watch all of that unfold in front of me. And then you're looking at your scorecard, and you say, wait a minute, top of the ninth, Trout bats third. And the number of things that had to line up, of course, Ohtani had to be comfortable coming into the game. You had to have Kuriyama-san, the great manager of Team Japan, to make that decision. And then, interestingly enough, you had to have a double play ball off the bat of Mookie Betts, which is pretty rare. Think about that. So you had to have had, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. come in as the pinch hitter, but not run right away. Mookie ground into a double play, which almost never happens, to make it two outs, nobody on, with Trout at the plate. So the number of things that had to line up just perfectly were just extraordinary. And I think, guys, it was just in so many ways meant to be. If you were looking for evidence that God meant for baseball to exist and to be played in the way that it is, you saw it on the field in Miami, because that was just divinely scripted for the game to end quite that way.
JP, have you started to think about, like, Ohtani? Like, what is he going to, because it was so widely viewed worldwide, and, you know, like, is Pele, Muhammad Ali? I mean, you're starting to get kind of into that. I mean, everybody, if there's that many people around the world watching, you know, Ohtani, right, and what he's doing, I mean, he could be kind of in that air. And I'm just wondering, like, what kind of money is this guy going to make? He might make more money than any athlete ever for a long time.
Right. And I think that he is someone who has vaulted into that realm of celebrity, beyond famous athlete, beyond great athlete. You're right. He has now been catapulted into this realm that we just don't see very often in sports. And it's the multi-continental nature of his popularity, to where obviously he's immensely popular in Japan and everywhere in Asia where baseball is played, they know who he is. And now he is objectively the most famous baseball player in North America based on what he's done. And one assumes if you happen to be a baseball fan and you live in Italy or England or the Netherlands, you also know who he is. So now you're getting into the area of a Messi or a Ronaldo or a Neymar in contemporary soccer. And you know, Pele is certainly in his own rarefied status in the history of the sport. But I think that we're talking about Ohtani when you mention those names in the right context. Because I use this term in talking about this WBC. It's an inflection point. It can be an inflection point. In the sense that if you were waiting to see if baseball truly had the potential to become an increasingly globalized sport, truly global, in the sense that soccer is a truly global sport, where in Nigeria, in Ghana, it is the game. And basketball, when you think about Dikembe Mutombo and his journey and other great players who have come from Africa to the NBA, now you're really hitting on all the continents where athletics are played that you have an awareness of that sport. And when you have a transcendent player, and I don't use that term lightly, that is a very special word to use that means that he's truly going beyond the normal stardom. You know, there are stars and then there are people who are truly, truly famous. And I think that the magic ingredient here, and I think our listeners tonight in Seattle probably have a greater appreciation for this than many others in the major leagues because of Ichiro, that there's just another level of fascination that goes into Japanese baseball superstars. When they come over to the U.S., how carefully their every move is scrutinized. And I go back, I remember the first time I read Art Thiel's book on the Mariners when I first covered the team in 2005 and reading what Art had written about and talking about Ichiro in the first spring exactly where you are right now, where Lou Piniella was getting asked about, well, Ichiro took 25 swings yesterday and only 20 today. Why? And we can only imagine Lou's reaction to these questions. But this is the manner in which the true icons of Japanese baseball are covered. And they are profound national characters in addition to just being athletes. And I think that you have that on top of the two-way player, on top of now the World Baseball Classic, which was viewed in so many different places around the world, even non-traditional baseball markets, and you have this really unique time and place that can catapult the notoriety of a player to levels not previously seen in baseball. And I think that we're dealing with someone who on his playing merits transcends what Babe Ruth did. He's doing both better than the Bambino did over that period of time. It's just an extraordinary thing to watch and appreciate.
John, you know, I'm sure you saw on social media after that, you know, first of all, we saw an animated version of Ohtani that we have not seen when he hit that double into the gap and he's on second base and he's waving his arms like, let's go. And we hear about his pregame speech about, hey, we can't show that. We got to stop for a night respecting them the way that we do. Talking about the U.S. So you saw a different side of him. But what people were mocking in a sense is, oh, Ohtani finally knows what it's like to play in a game that has consequence or means something, which is a shot at the Angels. But there's some truth to that. And I'm wondering if this is going to be something that maybe even hastens his exit from the Angels if it's not a good season, if it's not a competitive season, if this is something that is going to make him desire a competitive situation elsewhere even more.
Right. It's a fair point. And to that overall through line and where we're at right now with this story, it probably accentuates the interest that other teams will have in him, because they now look and say, wow, when his competitive fire is stoked on this level, that you see the best version of him, that you get more out of him when he is in the most competitive environment. I was thinking about this yesterday. You know, how great would we have thought Jordan was if he was the only good player on the Bulls and if they were finishing fourth or fifth in the division every year? it wouldn't have been the same because we wouldn't have seen him in the playoffs. You need, I think, those competitive moments to really measure the greats. And obviously, it's not Ohtani's fault that the Angels have struggled. He's obviously done everything he can to pitch and hit, for goodness sakes. So it's not his fault, but they are where they are. And I think that you can only, as an athlete, make the best of the competitive situation that you're in. And clearly, Ohtani did that. I think we saw just A, what it means when he's on a great team, and B, the power of international baseball, especially to the Japanese baseball culture, where there, this tournament matters more than the winner of the Japan series. This is the ultimate for them. And there are, frankly, in many sports cultures of the world, thinking about soccer, where if you were to ask Neymar what would mean more, to win the World Cup with Brazil or to win a Champions League, he would probably say a World Cup. And that's the way that it works in a lot of places that are not the United States. And so I think that from that standpoint, you saw him in the best competitive environment he's ever been in rise to the occasion in a profound way. And if I'm a GM wondering, okay, if he steps in my clubhouse on August 1st, how does he do? What happens? I think you're in a pretty interesting spot of affirming to yourself that if that occurs, that you're getting not just an A-level talent, but an A-level competitor. And like the final point I'll make on this aspect of it before I send it back to you guys on this is, when you consider it, and Dave, you could probably speak to this, like, you don't, if you're in a locker room and on a bad team, it's really hard to always be in a great mood. And in some ways, you almost want, if you're a competitor with a lot of pride, you want people to be angry and in a bit of a foul mood if you're losing, right? I mean, like, you're not supposed to be okay with it. You're not supposed to just, well, everything's great and I love my marketing deal and, you know, it's wonderful to be at the ballpark every day, even though we're going, I'm not, this is an extreme example, but if you're going 70 and 92, it's not fun. And you're not supposed to have fun if that's your record. You're supposed to be a little angry and a little bit on edge. And I think that we probably saw in Shohei to some extent last year, he wasn't granting interviews every day. And honestly, I don't blame him because there wasn't a whole lot of good things to talk about. I think now you're seeing that if he was on a team that was competitive every day, you'd probably get a bit of a different view of him.
Okay, so the Mariners win the World Series this year, and then they.
How did I know this was
Shohei
the next
Ohtani.
Question? How did I know?
Yeah, no. Well, actually, I was going to ask you about, now that the, have you come down off the WBC, and then where do you start the MLB season off?
Well, so great question. First of all, I'm still sort of basking in the afterglow of this, and I probably will for a while because it was just that much fun and how special it was. And I really hope that there are ways in which we take the joy of this event and what it means and how we processed and saw and celebrated the game and sort of bottle that. And maybe we don't need to necessarily drink it every day during the season, but kind of come back for a sip from those magic waters every now and then when we need it. I think that's an important part of it. And I think to answer the earlier question about Shohei, and I think it's a fair one about, you know, could the Mariners potentially get involved? I think if they win, hey, they'll have as good of a chance as anybody who is also willing to spend upwards of $350 or $400 million on the player. I think at the end of the day that the money is going to talk, but I do think this, after all of the years that Shohei has had in with the Angels, and if he reaches free agency, as I expect that he will, the money is going to be, just like Aaron Judge, the money is going to be there, close among the last two or three teams, just as it was for Aaron, to where he's going to be able to make a decision about where he wants to play, where he believes he's got the best chance to win, and where he belongs the best. And if the Mariners, and this is where maybe at the deadline, if the Angels totally fall out, I don't think they're going to really be worried about who they trade him to because he's going to free agency anyway. So I think Seattle will be able to have their at-bat there. I don't think it's a matter of raising any false hope, but hey, at the end of the day, the more you win – the more he's going to want to play for you. I think the money is a given. It's going to cost you an extraordinary sum to sign him. But what you're going to have to do is convince him that his best chance to win the World Series is with your team. And so if the Mariners want to sign him or have a chance to sign him, win a whole lot of games. That's the best advice I could give right now is to do that. And to the other question about next week, I'll be day one Yankee Stadium, which I'm really excited about. Yankees Giants is our game on MLB Network. And the joke as we were approaching, and once we knew what the schedule was for 2023, and we knew that the final bidding went down between the Giants and Yankees to get Aaron Judge, I said, wait a minute, I'm pretty sure Aaron Judge is going to be there. I just don't know what uniform he's going to be wearing. And that, to me, was the big question. And now, of course, we know he's going to be wearing the pinstripes, and it's going to be a lot of appreciation coming in from the Yankee fans that he decided to stay there for the balance of his career.
Hey, John, we saw a story or a tweet that came out today that I retweeted from Bob Nightingale. I don't know if you saw this, but per Forbes, they gave the top five values of franchises. No surprise, the Yankees are number one, valued at $7.1 billion. And then it goes Dodgers, Red Sox, Cubs, Giants. And then the top five profits from last season. Number one was the Seattle Mariners at $3.8 million.
I saw that.
So you like seeing that, but then you've got fans going, all right, well, then you can't cry poor. And you can't say, well, we're looking for the bargain shelf free agent. We're not going after those big guys because that's not us. You know, so how do you sort of settle that? How do you explain that, if you will? Do you buy into the numbers, A, and B, how do you sort of rationalize that?
Well, it's a very fair question, and I'm glad you brought it up because I think that a couple things. Number one, this was a team that maybe was not expecting to draw as many as, or at least hadn't banked in and counted on drawing as many fans as they did. So that to me says they had still more of a hopeful contender payroll that by the end had the legit contender and playoff team attendance plus the postseason revenues that come in from that, from going into the playoffs. I mean, there's additional money that comes your way. So it was a very successful year. They did not, and this is a really key thing, they did not have to spend. They weren't in a desperate state to spend a ton of money to make their team good again. And like we've said before, the most, in my view, the most important players from their long-term planning perspective, and certainly Julio is a big part of this, but it's Kirby and Gilbert. And if those guys are healthy, and if you can mark down cheap all-star level starting pitching from two guys who are homegrown, that is a game changer. That is a profound game changer. And so when your rotation is relatively effective and inexpensive, that's when you can start to spend on the very targeted players. And so the Castillo extension, obviously that kicks in more later on. I mean, they are, I don't think anybody would look at the Julio deal and what they did with Castillo and say, well, this is a team that's trying to just get by and spend a little bit here and there and is not fully invested. That to me would not be a fair way to describe what they're doing. But I do think when you look at that big number, that if you're a Mariner fan saying, okay, whether it is or would have been Judge last offseason or Ohtani this offseason, I'm expecting this team to be a major player in significant free agents, similar to maybe what the Padres have done. I think that's a fair statement. They don't have to be on everybody, but selectively be on the guys that you really think are important and can change your organization. And listen, it's not always the best thing to win the free agent bidding. I mean, one of the best things the Mariners did was trade Cano's contract, right? And mm-hmm. as opposed to signing it. And I think that we have to remember that at the time that was held up as a big transformative move, and there were some years where it was good and some years where it wasn't. And I think that it's important to keep that in mind, where even a player as brilliant as Ohtani, there are health risks and there are things you have to keep in mind. So, but that number, I saw that number too, and it stood out to me, Bob and Dave, and for me what that says is there are no excuses for the Mariners to not be invested and involved in these major free agent pursuits. And I think they will be. I think they're going to be right there in the thick of it. And the more games they win, the more appealing they're going to be as a free agent destination as well.
John, we love you. Great stuff as always. I know you're still walking on air after the WBC.
Yes.
lived up to and exceeded everybody's expectations, as we are. And great stuff. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Love the conversation, guys. Thanks for the new open. I mean, that was really thoughtful of you. Thanks to Mike as well. And just really appreciate all the conversations. And can't wait. When we talk next week, we're either going to be on opening day eve or opening day itself. And I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Thanks, JP. Thanks, John.
All the best, guys. Thank you.
There you go. John Morosi with us, as he is each and every week. Always a fun conversation with him. And a reminder, our coverage of Mariners spring training is presented by Alaska Airlines and Kitsap Credit Union. And, man, he was in his element at the WBC.
Oh,
that was just heaven for him. And those last two games, I mean, Japan versus Mexico, and then the finale, Japan versus the U.S., tremendous edge-of-your-seat baseball.
Well, and he was touting the whole WBC thing from early on, and he couldn't be happier, I'm sure, the way that ended.
Yeah. It's teetering behind you, Dave. It's teetering behind you.
I know that thing's going to take me out.
Yeah, yeah. So good to talk to him. And I'm happy for John because he is such an invested baseball fan, and he was singing the praises of the WBC. And
yeah.
You know, he comes out, and it's, you know, all of his praise was justified.
He was right.
It lived
yeah.
up to it. So it's pretty cool when you tell people you got to be excited about this. It's going to be a great thing, and maybe there's a lot of people going, yeah, I don't really care. We'll see. And then when it lives up to or exceeds it, especially with a nice guy like John, that's pretty cool.
It is cool.
It's very cool. So.
And I'm also glad that I inspired the open somewhat, some of the funnier quotes that he had there.
Yeah, yes, you did. That was all you.
By saying something that maybe is
he's
dumb.
Going, wait, are you being serious?
Are you being
right
serious
now?
With me?
Yeah, yeah. That was good. We finally got him an open, and he's been worthy of that. So it's good that he liked that. All right. Coming up, George Kirby is raising our expectations one start at a time. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks to John Morosi, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you're just tuning in, it's Wyman and Bob. We are live in Peoria, Arizona here. Seattle Sports on 710. And we are able to take in a game last night, watch the Mariners beat the Dodgers. Outcome wasn't really the big deal there, but what was the big deal is seeing George Kirby, who was such a huge part of what was a stellar starting rotation last year for the Mariners, go out there and go five innings, doesn't give up a hit, doesn't give up a run, strikes out nine, walks one. And just looking in mid-season form out there, and just the idea that he was as dominant as he was as a rookie, and thinking, okay, well, you assume he just gets better, right? He just goes into his second, he's got a year under his belt. He knows what he's in store for. Last year was a learning year. As great as he was, he's figuring out these hitters and what it's like to play a season that long and traveling the way that he did. And my goodness, it's exciting to think of what he can become. And Lefko asks us on the sheet, could he end up being an all-star caliber pitcher this year? Without question. I don't even think that's – can he? Absolutely. Absolutely he can.
It's hard to believe. I mean, I guess we've kind of been taking that for granted because there's lots of other questions. Like, you know, I was going to ask JP, and maybe we'll talk about it, but just what's the one thing that worries you the most? You know, but the pitching, holy moly. I mean, again, Robbie Ray, the way they're talking about him, he's got a new pitch he's working on. He looks dynamite. Kirby is 11 and two-thirds innings pitched, and he's had three earned runs. And what has he walked? Three guys? Something like that. So, and that's probably, he's probably pissed about that.
Right? Yeah. That's probably at a higher rate than he was doing in the regular season last year.
Yeah. You got Logan Gilbert, who's just an absolute workaholic. I mean,
he's still working, by the way.
He is. And, you know, it's been the case. I get the feeling that, like, he wouldn't wouldn't want us to tell everybody, even though we're telling everybody. But, you know, it's like he just is I kind of compared him to Ichiro a little bit, that like he's like obsessed with it, which is all good, right?
Yes.
And, you know, we haven't talked to Luis Castillo or Robbie Ray and really haven't talked about them. But, you know, like I was saying earlier, it's kind of like offensive line. I mean, if you're not talking about your pitching, your starting rotation, it's a really good thing because they're all good. And it's just, you know, haven't even brought up Marco that much, but or Flexen. But yeah, I mean, these young guys, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's really cool to see. But just going back to Kirby, you look at what he did last year. He made 25 starts. He had 133 strikeouts in 22 walks. He had fewer walks than starts. I mean, that's amazing. 25 starts, 22 total walks. So his command was so ridiculous. I look at that and I'm like, I don't even know if it's fair to expect that this year. He did that as a rookie in his first year. And he's one of those guys, Dave, you look at him, he never looks overexcited. He doesn't look angry if things aren't going right. He's kind of stoic and has the same exact demeanor. He just turned 25 last month, and to see what this guy is, and along with Logan Gilbert, who we're talking about, and then you've got, you know, the veterans in Robbie Ray and Luis Castillo, Marco Gonzalez. I mean, this rotation has just got the potential to be ridiculous, and they were last year, but to be even better, and that's pretty exciting because that takes a lot of heat off your offense, you know, and allows maybe some of the younger guys or guys like Kelnick to find their footing if they don't get out of the gate quick. You kind of, that gives you slack when you've got pitching like that in the defense that they have.
You worried about what are you most worried about, by the way? And I guess to me, it's, and I don't want to be prisoner of the moment, but I guess, you know, JP a little bit. I worry a little bit about that. Of course, everybody, I think, worries about injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing that could derail everything. But, you know, either that, to me, I mean, because everybody has that, right? But to me, it's either JP or, you know, sort of the utility player in Dylan Moore. We just saw him walk by, and yeah, it's a little bit concerning, and that kind of puts them in a tough spot as far as, you know, what they start with as far as their roster goes on opening day. But yeah, those are two things. I don't know. Other than that, Phil, we don't know a whole lot about what the bullpen's going to shape up to be, but we know we've got some really good arms in there.
Some fantastic arms, and it's, I mean, bullpen year to year, we've talked about it. You can, you know, have one year where they're dominant. They bring back essentially the same cast with maybe one or two different guys here or there, and then for whatever reason, guys will struggle. They just don't have it from the year before. So the bullpen is always, to me, I view it as a wild card. Like, all right, I'm not counting on it. They've got the talent. We talked to Andres Munoz, and Paul Sewald has been great, and they certainly have the arms. You just never know with a bullpen. Yeah, as far as individuals go, I'm curious to see, you know, the new guys. How does Colton Wong perform? How does AJ Pollock perform? And how much, you know, what's that platoon going to be like? Because if Kelnick gets off to a hot start and maybe he hits lefties, all right, maybe you're not seeing Pollock as much as you initially thought you would be seeing him because he's going to platoon with Kelnick, and Kelnick's, if he can somehow carry over what he's doing, I don't expect him to hit, you know, 412 or whatever he's hitting currently. But, you know, if he's out there and the guy's feeling good at the plate and doing his thing, I don't want to see him pulled out of the lineup unless he just needs a rest.
Yeah.
So, yeah, outside of the new guys, which, like I said, I'm curious to see what they do. I don't know. Again, I hate to say worry. That feels like, you know, then we're kind of dismissing it's spring training.
Yeah, right.
But JP didn't have a great year last year. You'd like to see him hit spring, like, all right, he's looking good. He's, you know, looks like his timing is great, and he's squaring the ball up, and you just want to see that. You know, we talked about it yesterday, the running start, getting that running start into the season. So far, it doesn't feel that way for him. So I'd say, yeah, maybe I'm really curious with a slight pinch of worry when it comes to JP.
What if, who would be, let's say the worst happens, that either something happens with JP or, you know, he just, maybe it's an injury, or maybe he doesn't play well, and, you know, they have to bench him or whatever. Who's playing shortstop?
Well, normally it'd be Dylan Moore.
Right.
I would think if we're sitting here right now looking at the roster, it'd be Haggerty.
Yeah.
I think that would probably be the option, unless there's somebody else that they're considering that's not part of the bigger group we've been looking at. But
is the question with him whether he has the arm
with Haggerty?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, it's been a thought. I think he had an injury in the past, and they talked about that and, you know, whether that was going to translate. But his arms look good in spring, watching him throw the ball around. Now, whether he's, you know, could be your everyday shortstop if he had to be for a while, I'm not sure. But, yeah, I don't think you have a lot of obvious, well, if it's this guy, if it's not this guy, it's going to be this guy. Yeah, when it comes to short, I don't think you have that with Dylan down currently. So my first thought would be it would be Haggerty, and then hopefully they'd figure it out. Maybe there's somebody in the minors they feel good about that could come up and fill that spot. Now, would they be a two-way? Would they give you the defense and offense? Mm-hmm. Or are they going to be somebody, hey, we got a good glove, maybe not a great bat? You know, we'll see. But, yeah, it's an interesting thing. I'm hoping we're not even considering it. We're not going to talk about it because JP is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping, Dave.
Well, it's funny, you know, people looking at this team from afar with what's, you know, what Robbie Ray is doing and, you know, Luis Castillo. You know, I'm sure if you are in Philly or another baseball town, you don't really know. You know about Julio, of course. And, you know, the three recognizable, like, stars on this team that, you know, are known nationwide. Not many teams that have that. I mean, if you had to answer the question, you know, name three all-star players on every team, you know, there's probably not a lot of people that could do that. And I feel like Mariners got, they're pretty loaded right now. It's really unlike any time that I've been down here in spring training, which I think we started in like 2017. Yeah, it's amazing how different it is this year.
Reminder, our coverage of Mariners spring training is presented by Alaska Airlines and Kitsap Credit Union. Coming up, we learned some key things for the Mariners we talked to today. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob, live from the Mariners spring training complex in Peoria, Arizona. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Coming up, we got the Mariners taking on the Cincinnati Reds. We'll turn you over to the pregame here coming up at 6 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. We've had a packed day speaking with a bunch of different people out here, and it's been a great day guest-wise. We had, of course, John Schneider with us for the John Schneider Show, Seahawks GM, our buddy Paul Moyer. Cal Raleigh was with us. Tom Murphy was with us. Ty France was with us. And then, of course, John Morosi, the perfect capper to the whole thing. I don't know if there's any one thing that stood out to you. I think maybe my new burgeoning friendship with Tom Murphy, our bonding over the band Slipknot, is big for me.
It was one of my favorite moments. And they were like, dude. I'm like, are you two done growing out over here yet?
Well, I was showing our old buddy, comedian Craig Gass, is somehow friends with the lead singer of Slipknot. His name's Corey Taylor, and Craig was in town one time and said, hey, man, Corey's a friend of mine. You want to go see the show? And I thought we'd just have tickets, maybe some good seats. I'm like, heck yeah. And then we end up standing on the side of the stage for the whole show, and we were on his tour bus hanging out and had pictures and videos I was showing to Tom Murphy, and he's going, that's my dream. Looking at it, and he's very funny, and I thought his line about, you know, when he goes in there to work out, that his music clears out the gym, so he's got all the equipment to himself.
And then when any other, what he said, rap or any non-instrumental music,
play instruments,
then he leaves,
he checks out, which again we connected there too.
Yeah, no, that was great. Ty France is an incredibly nice guy. And, you know, just, I'm always big, like, eye contact, and, you know, he's just, it's amazing, like, he's just fully, he is where his feet are. What do they say, you know, be where you're at? I mean, that's the thing with him. He's just a very, very cool guy.
I like it that he calls Edgar Mr. Edgar.
Mr. Edgar, I did hear that.
Yeah. He's very polite, and he's not saying it in a goofy way. He's like, oh, yeah, I really enjoy talking to Mr. Edgar about hitting. Mm. And he's very, very, just a very polite guy, and he's very conscientious, very, you know, deep thought. Another good dude. I know people are probably, all right, yeah, we get it. They're all good guys. They really are. Yeah. Really, if you're a Mariner fan, you got a team full of good guys you're rooting for.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I thought also the story, and I'm sure that Cal has told this story before, but I think it was the first time that I heard it from him anyway, that he went into, Who's the catcher that he went into and said, "Hey, I got to get a couple cuts in here before I go out and
was,
hit the
O'Keefe."
O'Keefe. He was like, "Before I go out and make history for Seattle Mariner fans, I got to take a couple of hits or cuts here." And it's like one ricocheted off my toe. I almost missed one. You know,
one flare like, this way, caught it on the end of the bat. And
five of the worst swings he's probably ever taken. He's like, "All right, ready to go."
Yeah, O'Keefe says, "You're right where you need to be." That's just what a moment. What a moment to think, you know, I couldn't have had a worse, you know, couple of swings in the cage. Hadn't been swinging. Thumb is hurt. I haven't been in the game. I'm on the bench.
Yeah, I've been sitting there. You're cold.
The hopes and dreams of this entire fan base rest on this at-bat here. And here he comes, bottom of the ninth. And, you know, again, a movie script that you feel is too Hollywood to be real. And I believe it was a full count. And bangs one off the Hit It Here Cafe, off the windows. And just, I mean,
was there two outs?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, it's kind of like the Ohtani Trout thing.
Yeah, it just, it was one of those things you talk about, like, wouldn't that be cool? Because it's not normally how it goes. And for him to do what he did was just
But the whole time
so
he's telling it, he's just very calm and, you know, steady. And that's the thing about, you know, he's a coach's son.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't know who we were talking to. Was it maybe Service or DePoto that were like, yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that, like, he knows. Like, he's the, I mean, that guy, if he's not a manager at the end of his career, it'd be a shame.
Yeah.
Cal just knows everything about the game of baseball. But mostly, you know, the demeanor. I mean, that's a game that you have to be even keeled.
I think that's the most emotion I've ever seen out of him. Remember him running the bases, and he's like got his hands on his head, like, "Oh my God!"
Yeah.
Like he's not an animated guy, good or bad. He's very stoic, like George Kirby. He's just kind of hard to. Is he happy or sad? What's going on there? Because he's that guy. And even afterwards, after he had time to, you know, they're celebrating, champagne, cigars, and. You know, that, again, his response to me going, "Dude, that's a moment that'll be talked about for generations in the city." And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, that's pretty cool."
I know.
Like, well, when Jen asked him about, when are runners going to learn they can't run on you? Well, they're allowed to run. I mean, they can do what they want. It's just so literal and matter of fact about it. He's hilarious in a very, very low key way.
Yeah, well, and I think that's a very underrated and often not, you know, very. It's not very common that you see that people don't. I mean, I think you're celebrated now if you are real emotional, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very underrated that he is even keeled and he doesn't let his emotions get the better of him.
Yeah. And even Ty France, you know, we didn't get into it with him. We talked about him being plunked, but he doesn't really respond. You don't see him. You see guys get hit and they kind of. Blow up a little bit. They'll stare down the pitcher or walking down first base on zipping their gloves, whatever. He's just kind of like, "All right," takes the armor off and goes about his business.
Even if there's a fight happening around him.
Yeah, he kind of steps back from the fight, like, "What's going on here? How come everybody's so mad?" Yeah, it's very funny to see. But just a great day. Again, in case you missed it, we talked to John Schneider. We talked to Paul Moyer, Cal Raleigh, Tom Murphy, Ty French, John Morosi. If you missed any of that, I highly recommend checking it out on the podcast page. Just go to seattlesports.com, click on the podcast tab, hit our picture, and it'll be right there waiting for you. Some really, really good stuff to get to know these guys on this team. I think you're really, really going to enjoy it. So you got the Mariners and the Reds coming up, spring training action. We'll be back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.